Welcome to the Full Potential Podcast. I am your host, Nick Wagner Sr., and every week I interview guests that share career stories, ideas, and experiences to empower and inspire people to reach their full potential. If you enjoy the episode, please subscribe on your favorite podcast platform, including Apple Podcasts, Google, and Spotify. Thanks for listening. Kelly Yambor, welcome to the Full Potential Podcast. We do this almost every Sunday night to have people like yourself share your career stories. And I'd love you to just start by introducing, you know, who is Kelly? We'll start there before we jump into your career.
Yeah, so I'm Kelly, and currently I am a gifted education teacher in Denver, Colorado. I teach at the Logan School for Creative Learning, which is a school specifically for the gifted population, all about individualized learning, real world experiences, all of that. And then before I moved to Denver, I was actually a public school gifted education teacher in Connecticut. And so I kind of found gifted through, I was an education major in college. I went to the University of Missouri for undergrad, and then in the summers, I actually worked for a gifted program. So I just ended up really like falling in love with that world, wanting to do more of it. So then right after undergrad, I did my master's at UConn in gifted education. And so that's kind of the short version of my path.
We're gonna dive into that and hear a little bit more. And, you know, I think being an educator, being a teacher is one of those jobs that obviously you have an impact on so many people on a daily basis, a yearly basis. I mean, the amount of students and families that you get to work with is just it's unbelievable how many people you get to touch. So we'll talk about that. But let's go back to when you were little Kelly growing up. Was being a teacher something that you've always wanted to do since you were a little kid? Like, has this been the dream the whole time, or did you want to be something completely different and then found teaching another way? Like, tell us how that happened.
Yeah, so I think I wanted to be like a writer. Like, I thought for sure that was 100% what I was going to be doing. My mom found like a journal, some kind of project from like fifth grade that was like, what do I want to be when I grow up? And I said I wanted to write for magazines. And that pretty much actually stuck through like middle school and high school. And I actually ended up at the University of Missouri for undergrad because of their journalism program. So I pretty much stuck through with that idea. But it wasn't really until high school that I had considered teaching. And even then I was like, do I really want to be a teacher? Because I loved my teachers, but I also knew like how hard it was. And I was like, I don't know if I could do what they do, but I really admire what they do. And so then it actually kind of took me going to college and being in kind of lecture halls where I was sort of like, I was missing my high school teachers. I had really incredible teachers, particularly like my social studies department was really phenomenal. And that kind of inspired my choice to go into that. But I just like, I missed them. And I was like, maybe that's what I want to be doing instead. And so it took like a couple of weed out classes in the journalism program. And then like me just like keeping on considering it. And then I said, you know what, I'm just going to do it. And then from then on, it kind of just stayed where I knew I wanted to be a teacher and be in a classroom. So.
Yeah, it is. I always find it interesting. I love asking that question because I love to hear what kids want to be when they want to grow up. And then did it happen? Right. And a lot of times it doesn't. And I always try to tell people that's okay. Right. I mean, it's okay. I still don't know what I want to be when I grow up. I'm 39. So I think it's okay to change what you want to do. And I'm glad that you found something that you're passionate about. And you could still be a writer if you wanted to, you know, we can talk about that later, but you could still do that. So I love how it was your actual teachers in high school that inspired you to possibly take this path, which means you probably had some pretty amazing teachers while you were going to school. And that's like why I think this profession is just, I think it can be so impactful. I mean, you just kind of hit on it, right? I mean, like the impact you have on kids' lives every day. I mean, you don't get that in every profession. So I love that. So tell us about, so you went to undergrad, you ended up going, you know, you ended up going in for teaching and share a little with the audience. Was it expected that you went to college with like, were your parents like, Kelly, you're going to college, or was that your choice?
I think it was my choice, but it also was expected at the same time. I think if I wanted to go down a different path, my parents would have been supportive. You know, I have a sister who did community college and kind of, you know, did that route with an associate's. And, but for me, like, I loved school, and my dad had a really amazing college experience at the University of Virginia. My mom has a master's degree. So both of my parents went to college, and it was definitely something where they almost expected it, but I think they expected it because they knew I would like it and want to do it. And that was true, like 1,000%. I had like the most incredible college experience. And, you know, I went to a true like college town kind of school. And that's kind of what my dad had. He went to the University of Virginia, and, you know, Charlottesville is definitely like a big, you know, college town that kind of revolves around the school. And so I kind of realized growing up, like, oh, I want something like that for me. And so I always talked like, I'm going to college. Like, it wasn't really a question for me, but I think my parents would have been supportive either way.
Well, I think it helps. And I've had a lot of guests on here that have gone to college, have had great careers. I've got guests that haven't gone to college and have had great careers. I mean, I think everyone's unique, but the fact that you love learning, like you said, that makes going to college a lot easier if you like to learn, right? I'm sure you've had some friends, I know I have, that they went to college, but they didn't like learning. And I think it makes it a lot harder to continue your education. So you went to undergrad. And I want you to share with our audience, because I think a lot of people probably don't know this, in order to be an educator, whether it's public schools, private schools, you need a master's degree in all states or most states? How does that work?
In most states, I believe you do. And honestly, it's kind of worth it, even if it's not required, just because your pay goes up a lot. But yeah, it's in most states, it's required, or they'll give you kind of a grace period where it's like, oh, your first 3 years, you don't need it. But after that, you need to at least start taking classes.
So I appreciate you clarifying that. So you ended up going to the University of Connecticut, and I'm going to read from your LinkedIn, for Master of Arts, an MA in Creativity, Giftedness, and Talent Development, K-12. That's a mouthful. So tell us what that means, and how did you pick that major for your master's, and why that major?
Yeah, so I applied to grad school like in my senior year of undergrad, knowing like that's what I wanted to do right after undergrad, because throughout my summers in undergrad, I worked for the Johns Hopkins Center for Talented Youth. It's a gifted summer program. And that's where I discovered like gifted education as a field. Like, I kind of knew about it when I was going to school as a student, but they didn't have a lot of gifted programming like where I grew up, especially like the middle and high school levels. And doing this program, which actually I was introduced to through one of my high school teachers that I kept in touch with, she said, oh, you should come work for this program that I, you know, help run. And I did it, and I loved it. And I said, how can I do more of this in my full time? Because I was getting my degree in secondary social studies at the time, but then I discovered this whole population of kids and talked to them about how a lot of them were not really being properly served in their typical classrooms, and how CTY was kind of their chance to really learn at their pace and the way they wanted to learn and properly be challenged. And I was like, that's what I want to do as a teacher, is serve kids who need that. And so I knew that kind of the best way to go about getting a job in that area would probably be to get a master's degree, especially if I wanted to do it right away. And for me, it was, you know, I was lucky because I was like, this is it. Like, I know this is what I'm supposed to be doing. So I wanted to get the master's right away. And so I had to do a lot of research, because gifted is not a huge field by any means.
Can I want to pause you for one second before you finish that thought? For all my listeners, like, what is like a gifted program, or how do you define a gifted student? Because I know people have probably heard that term, but like, you're the expert. So tell us what that means.
So a gifted student, the way that I kind of put it, is a student that has academic needs that require being challenged more than a typical school curriculum can give. So for some, that might be they are testing well above grade level in, you know, a standardized test. But for some kids, it's about a lot more than a test. And for most kids, it is. It might mean that they're really bored in class and they're acting out, but it's not because they aren't smart or because they don't want to be there. It's because they already know all the material. And so those kids might not test so well, but that doesn't mean that they aren't gifted. And then there's also kids who they might be gifted in sports or the arts, you know, not necessarily a core subject, but it is something where you can tap into that giftedness and that like above average ability and use it in a school environment to, you know, motivate them to learn more and motivate them to, you know, learn and learn in like a meaningful sort of way. So got that's it. Kind of how I would describe like, you know, gifted kids. And then the gifted services are just opportunities for students, you know, that aren't necessarily going to get that challenge that they need in like a regular classroom. And it gives them an opportunity to do it with a teacher who kind of understands those needs and understands how to challenge the kids appropriately.
Yeah, sorry to pause you, but I wanted to make sure that we defined that so everyone kind of knew the world that you live in. So you found the program at UConn, I think is where you left off.
Yeah.
And applied while you were an undergrad.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, it was a busy fall of undergrad senior year, but I just kind of, and I was stuck. I was like, do I go right into teaching and then go back and do the master's? But I was like, you know what? I already know that gifted is where I want to be. And there's this really great program that I found. And why not, you know, try it? So once I got into UConn's, I was like, that's where I'm going. Like, no questions asked.
Now, and I want to pause for a second because you mentioned that during undergrad, you were, I don't know if you can consider an internship, but you were working as a teacher during the summer. So you know, with this, I think you mentioned the John Hopkins Center for Talented Youth. So you were already, you weren't necessarily like a certified teacher already, but you were already in that world of with students teaching. And did that just energize you even more to like help you realize like, this is what I want to do and this is the right choice?
Yeah. So I started out at CTY as like a residential assistant. So I was, you know, it was kind of like camp counselor, but a little bit more to it. I was, you know, living on the halls with the kids, running activities for them. So I was less on the academic side of things actually at this program, but a major part of the RA job was to go to kids' classes and visit them and seeing these kids like dissecting sharks or, you know, doing really intense game theory with 12-year-olds and things like that. I was like, whoa, like that is the kind of like when kids go into my classroom, like that's what I want to see. Like I want them to be genuinely like inspired to learn something, you know. I don't want them always just going for the grade. I don't always want them just like trying to get the paper done. I want them to like light up with like some of the things that I get to do with them. And I just saw it at like CTY. I saw it like every single day. And I was like, whoa, that's like really what I want to be doing. But I did also teach, you know, when you're doing education in your undergrad, typically you do pretty much like 2 years of in-classroom teaching experiences, internships, student teaching, all that good stuff. So I kind of was looking at how do I combine what I do in the summer to that teaching experience I was getting through the internships. And
I want to ask you, because I know when you were at UConn, you were also a graduate assistant. So were you also teaching during your master's program at UConn? Like, is that something that was required or something you wanted to do?
So I looked at grad assistantships. I mean, I hadn't really met anybody who was doing a master's full time in education. A lot of teachers I know, they would do their master's online while they were in school, whatever. But I kind of knew full time was what I wanted. And so I had to do a lot of Googling of like, you know, how could I get funded? How do I, how does this really work? Where would I live? What do I do? And so I ended up finding out that, oh, you can apply for grad assistantships and, you know, they'll fund you and give you a stipend. And I was like, that seems like the smart thing to do. They're not easy to find, but I just checked like multiple times a day, all of the UConn, like, you know, search things. And actually my department at UConn, the gifted department, my advisor was so helpful and she would send me links whenever she got them. And so just by going through that process and really like grinding in that spring, I was able to find one through the community outreach office at UConn. And so I ended up teaching a service learning class to one of the learning communities on campus. So it wasn't required. Yeah, it wasn't required, but I mean, it obviously financially was helpful, and also it was a really great thing for my resume. And I also got to teach a service learning class, which was really cool. And, you know, it was nice to have that connection to campus, because when you're a grad student, you don't always have that. It's kind of about your classes and your classes. But this was a nice way to kind of experience campus a little bit more, connect to the student body, and, you know, just get kind of a different feel for maybe if I didn't go down that path of gifted, is this something I would want to do? And, you know, it was a really valuable experience.
Yeah, I mean, I think the more opportunities you have to try what you want to do, I think the better to really understand what you like and what you don't like. So, you know, you graduated from UConn with your master's degree, and, you know, I work in the business world, and I used to, you know, as part of my job in HR, I did a lot of recruiting for my company for our early career technology program. So I know how recruiting works for like IT professionals or a lot of the corporate world. How does recruiting work for educators, right? So you're at grad school, you're about to finish. Like, is it, do they have, you know, do, are there job fairs for, you know, students looking for teaching jobs? Like, how does that work? How did you find this, your first job when you were done in school?
A lot of applications. So they do have job fairs and things like that. I went to one at UConn. But what I found, especially like with my gifted master's, was that it was hard for me to find a gifted job right away, because a lot of those postings didn't come up till later. But if you're a teacher looking to get a job, whether you're done with your master's or undergrad, I know UConn has kind of like a 5-year program that includes the master's. But what you can typically do is, yeah, you can go to job fairs. Different districts will have job fairs. So if there's a district that you know that you'd be interested in, you can go and just kind of network a lot that way. But also a lot of it is just spending time on online application platforms and just refreshing and refreshing and saying, is there a posting? Is there a posting? And especially when you have something so niche like gifted. And so I started applying for jobs in the spring, and it wasn't until July where gifted jobs were actually being posted. And then it seemed like they all were posted at one time. So I ended up going from not getting any interviews at all to like 4 interviews in the same week. And I was like, wow, that's a lot going on. And so that's how I found my first full time in Connecticut.
And that was a public school that you did that for almost 2 years.
Yes.
I want to hear this, because I think it's really unique where, you know, you have this, you know, as an educator, you have the school year, right? So it's like, and like, as a kid, I'll always remember like end of August, like everyone knew what that meant, right? Like, school's coming. I want to hear about like your first day as like a full-time gifted education teacher, like I think it was Windsor-Lock Public Schools. Like, what was that like? Like, when you got to go to your classroom for the first time and know like this was your space, like how did that make you feel?
It felt really good. And I was super lucky because my school district, they didn't have a gifted program before me or anything. So part of my job, which was intimidating but also very exciting, was building this program and seeing, you know, based on your experience with your master's and working for the summer programs and classroom experience, like what could gifted programs look like for our schools? And so they kind of gave me the first couple of weeks to just walk around, go visit classes, set up my classroom, and really just see like, okay, based on how the school is structured, the schedule, how kids are put into classes, all of that, like what was kind of my place. And so that was amazing. I wish every teacher could have that, because I think just walking around your school and seeing how it works is really valuable. I think that's why a lot of people do like substitution, like, you know, they're substitute teachers, and then maybe they'll end up at that school because they kind of get a feel for everything. But yeah, so my first 2 weeks, I got some time to do the wiggle room. But then like my first day of class, when kids were actually coming to me, once I kind of structured the program, I was like, oh my God, what do I do with them? Like, I've been teaching a lot, but it's just different when it's your own room and you make the rules and these kids don't know who you are and whether to trust you or not. And you're like, okay, everyone, here we go. But it ended up being, you know, a really amazing experience. And I'm still grateful to those kids for, you know, being like my guinea pigs in my first year of teaching. And I think a lot of teachers feel that way too.
No, it's so cool. I mean, I can imagine like how excited you must have been after, you know, going to undergrad, going to grad school, and like all the teaching you've already done to finally get your own classroom. So I wanna ask the question, because you left that job during COVID. You left that job. You moved across the country. You took a new job. But I want to ask the question before we get to your current role, which, you know, you said earlier is the job you're in now, the Logan School for Creative Learning. You know, the end of your time at Windsor Locks Public Schools was, you know, COVID, right? So like the last probably 3 or 4 months was COVID. I want you to be, you know, open and honest with me and my audience, like, how difficult was that, making the transition from a job that we've historically, you know, K through 12 has always been in person. Like we didn't do remote learning. We didn't do distance learning. Like that wasn't a thing, right? I mean, like, you know, you might get to the college level and have online courses. Like that's pretty common, right? But, you know, my 9 and 7 year old had never done virtual or distance learning before COVID. So what was the, as an educator, like, what was that like to get sent home and to try to figure out a curriculum and use all these online tools with your kids for the first time?
It was something. I think my district kind of went about it the right way, where instead of saying, all right, well, we might not go back to school, so we need to start Zoom meetings or Google Meets right away. We kind of waited like a few weeks. We just said, we need time to figure this out. So we got to kind of test out Google Meet and all that kind of thing. That was the one I probably used the most. I also tried some other apps and things just to kind of up the engagement. Like Flipgrid is a cool one. But yeah, it was, no one knew what the normal was supposed to look like. Like no one knew like kind of where that to set the expectations, because even aside from like, we don't know how well these kids know how to use the technology. I mean, most of them, I was teaching middle and high school, so, you know, they kind of had it figured out, you know, props to the elementary school teachers who had probably a little bit more to do in that area. But, you know, kids would be like showing up to their, you know, in their pajamas, laying on their beds and stuff. And we're like, all right, we're just gonna chug along and like make it work, you know? And in addition to that, like, we didn't really know, like, how much should we really be expecting of these kids right now? This is such a tumultuous time. Like some of these kids are taking care of their siblings, and you know, some of these parents are, you know, having layoffs from work, and like, you know, what can we really be expecting of these kids right now? And so it was really hard. And I mean, something that I think was especially telling was that my class, you know, it was enrichment, gifted education, and it more or less had to be treated as an optional class, because, you know, the core classes, like none of them really knew, like, you know, how they were going to do their curriculum, and, you know, they needed to get through the standards for the rest of the year. Whereas I kind of determined our standards and where we were supposed to be going, so I could be a lot more flexible. And, you know, in a way, enrichment classes and gifted education classes are an additional class, which, you know, isn't always the best model, but it was kind of, you know, it was an early program and kind of where we were at. So, you know, it was more or less my class was optional. What I was surprised about was that I think a lot of my students were grateful for the option, which I did not expect. Like my attendance was actually fairly solid, and my assignments turn in rate was pretty good, because I think I was giving them a lot of choice projects and kind of fun things. And I was having a guest speaker come every week, just like friends of mine who did different professions, and having them on and, you know, doing kind of a Zoom Q&A things with them. And so I was surprised by how many kids like wanted that option. And it, in a way, it was like really inspiring, because they're like, I do still want to be learning, even though I'm at home and I could be in my pajamas and probably get away with, you know, who knows what. But like, they really wanted to be learning, and they really wanted to be coming to like their enrichment classes and stuff. And so that part was really inspiring, but also kind of being treated as optional was, you know, a little rough for me and just like my morale, and it was a little hard to keep going. But it also was like a very rewarding thing to have kids still sticking around, still coming to office hours, even when they didn't have to, and us still kind of forming that community online when the world was just going crazy around us.
Yeah, I mean, again, kudos to you and all the other educators out there that figured out like how to engage kids, especially like you said, elementary school level, because that it's just something we've never really experienced before. And again, college students, I think, had already been doing online school, but most of these K through 12 kids had not. So just thank you again for you and all the other educators that made that happen. So I want to pause, because you at that point in July of 2020 left your job in the public schools, moved to Colorado, and you're now at your current role, which is the Logan School for Creative Learning, which is a private school. So share a little bit with us about like what is the school, you know, it's a private school specifically, I believe you said, for creative learning. So share a little bit about that. And I'd love to kind of hear your thoughts on the difference between public schools and private schools I know you haven't been in either for too long, but just a little bit about the difference between the two of them.
Yeah. So the best way I can describe Logan is just telling you basically like what the biggest chunk of the education is, which is called units. And so instead of a teacher being like, okay, these are the things that we need to cover as a class, like I'm going to try to make sure there's some like choice projects in there and blah, blah, blah. But like, I'm determining what we need to learn content wise. It's totally flipped. So the way it works is kids get to pick two units a year, one fall and one spring. And each unit can be literally whatever they want. So if a kid says, I want to study cheese, we're like, all right, we are studying cheese. And then if another kid says, I want to study video games, it's like, all right, that's what we're doing. And so each kid determines what their curriculum essentially is going to be in terms of topic. But then my role as their teacher is to make the curriculum, kind of help design it. And we collaborate on that a lot, especially at that middle school level. So my school is K-8. So it's like kindergartners get to choose their units and what they want to be doing. But the middle school level, it's really cool because I'll say, okay, well, we got to have some projects that are a little bit of everything. So as their teacher, I have to make sure, are they doing science? Are they doing some reading? Are they doing writing? Math is a little bit more traditional, but I try to incorporate that as well. And just making sure that they're getting the skills that they'll need for high school through that topic that they want to study. So like cheese is really cool because they can do a lot of labs where they like make mozzarella, but they can also do a timeline about like the history of a certain type of cheese. And then maybe they do like a little bit of geometry with a cheese wheel and they want to do something there. Like there's all kinds of things they could be doing. There's a lot of, we have this really great like work lab where they can do woodwork, metalwork, pretty much anything. So maybe a kid, you know, makes a cheese wheel for all we know, or a device to cut cheese. Like pretty much the options are limitless. And so as a teacher, like I collaborate with the student about what kind of projects do we want to do here to get those kind of skills. And sometimes I have to say, okay, you're doing this project because I know you don't like to write, but like you need to write a paper at some point. But at the end of the day, it is a very collaborative process, and I help guide them through those projects, connect them to the resources on the school's campus that helps them. The school also works to connect students with, like, every student gets at least one field trip and interview with some kind of expert related to the topic that they're studying. There's a lot of, like, getting out of the building and doing environmental education, those like real world experiences. And so it's very, very unique. We don't have tests, we don't have grades, we don't do standardized testing. It's all about like teacher feedback in words, conversations, and check-ins every week and that kind of thing.
So very, very, very different from your experience in the public schools, it sounds like.
Yes.
I think based off of what you went to school for, which is probably why they were so excited to have you, because you not only went to school for this, but then you had the opportunity to even create a gifted program in your first job out of school. So it sounds like it's a great fit for you. What, just your short time at both schools, public versus private, like what, you know, obviously there's pros and cons to both, but what is the thing that you like about public and what do you like about private? Like what are some thoughts on that?
Yeah, so I think that it was tough to make the decision I made to move schools because I was kind of stuck between this place of do I stay where I'm at, where I am giving a service that probably would not otherwise be provided to these kids because, you know, in private school, unless, you know, a student is on a scholarship or has financial aid, a lot of those students can get enrichment outside of school if they really wanted. It's harder, you know, to get kids to different activities and things like that, but it's probably possible for them. So whether that be sports or, you know, clubs that meet in town or whatever, you know, those are all different like enrichment experiences that gifted kids really benefit from. But in a public school, you're more likely to have students that they don't necessarily have access to those kinds of out of building enrichment things. And so, you know, as a gifted teacher, it was like such an honor to be able to work with kids who maybe ordinarily wouldn't have access to the service and be able to provide that in school where they can access it. And so I was kind of stuck between, do I want to do that, but frankly face job security every year because of what I do, since a lot of public schools don't have the finances or prioritize gifted, or do I go to this school where I'm not doing as much of that, like, you know, providing access to kids who wouldn't ordinarily have it. There obviously are, you know, students who are there on scholarships, financial aid. Our school does a great job with that. But I'd be doing less of it at the end of the day. And so I had to kind of decide, do I leave that public school kind of situation or do I go to private where, yeah, I'm not working to do that same type of advocacy, but I'm still working with kids who need me in a different sort of way. And like, and I get to do it with more job security and in a way where like the students are so dedicated because the entire school revolves around their needs instead of like this one class does. You know, the whole school understands that kid. And I'm like, I just had to decide like what where do I want to be? And you know, part of it was job security, but it was also like, when am I going to get the chance to teach at a school like that?
Yeah, I mean it's an interesting I think you interesting perspective, and I love how you kind of went through the thought process, and I mean you're so young, you're gonna have other opportunities to teach at other schools in the future, so I think it sounds like a great opportunity for you. So thank you again for coming on and sharing your career journey about being an educator. Like I said to you earlier, I've had some college professors on the show, but I never had a K through 12 educator, so I appreciate you making the time. I always close with the same question, Kelly, for all my guests. What is the one piece of advice that you would give my listeners that's helped you reach your full potential? So, that one thing that's helped you be successful in all that you've done throughout your career.
Can I kind of do two?
Of course, absolutely.
I
There's, yes, of course.
think they are somewhat related. So I'd say the first one is go with your gut. Like seriously go with your gut because I know, especially in this past spring when COVID was happening and I was like, my job isn't super secure. I've got these options. What do I kind of do? I felt like a lot of people who, you know, were kind of talking in my ear about what I should, shouldn't do, whatever. And at the end of the day, I had to just go with like what my gut feeling was, which was this is a once in a lifetime opportunity to work for a school that is all about gifted. You can travel across the country with your kids. You can do units about cheese, like all these different things. And, you know, I think that's what I should probably do if I want to keep teaching. And I did. And I have zero regret. But there's going to be people who say, oh, that's not practical, or oh, that's not going to make as much money. And you just need to go with like what your gut is and what you think is best for you. And then I'd say the other related note would be really like know your worth. Like I have super imposter syndrome. Like I have to like definitely take my own advice here. But just like know your worth because I think that is related to going with your gut. Because if your gut feeling is like, this is not for me, like this is not what I should be dealing with. Like, if you're in a job you don't like and you're like, this is not okay, like, it probably isn't okay. Or if you're like, I really want to go down this path, even though I've been studying this for this many years or working this kind of job for this many years, it's like, well, if you got that gut feeling and you think that like you are worth more than what you are doing, or like it is worth trying something else, like, know your worth because especially when you're an early career professional like me, like I'd say my job right now is a dream job. And for a lot of teachers, and I was, you know, especially during this COVID school year, I was like, am I doing this right? Like, am I like doing what I'm supposed to be doing? Like, am I a good teacher? You know, I think every teacher asked themselves that this year at least once. But it's like, know your worth and be like, yes, this, I am worth this job. This job is for me. This path is for me. Even if things feel really crazy right now, like just knowing your worth and going with your gut, I feel like will ultimately get you to where you need to be and keep you in the places where you're supposed to be.
Yeah, no, that's well said. And I absolutely agree with you. I think every teacher had a lot of questions for themselves over the past 15 months for obvious reasons, but great advice. Thank you again, Kelly. And we're going to link to your LinkedIn profile in the show description, both on YouTube and on the podcast, so people can get in touch with you if they want to ask you more about your career or, you know, the work you've done with gifted programs across the country. So thank you, thank you, thank you. I appreciate you making the time, and I wish you the best in your upcoming school year, which I know is creeping up on you sooner than later. I hope you enjoyed this episode of the Full Potential Podcast. If you'd like to hear more interviews, please subscribe to our podcast on your favorite podcast platform, including Apple Podcasts, Google, and Spotify. You can also connect with us on social media, on Facebook, Instagram, and YouTube. And don't forget to check out our website, fullpotentialmovement.com. Thank you for listening. Thank you for sharing, and be well.